The Wise Women's Council is back. We are back this year. We are now accepting enrollments for our class of 2022. One person said, "It made me feel seen and less alone. What I didn't expect was just how expansive Wise Women's Council was for me. The people I met, what I learned both about myself and the world, it truly expanded what I thought was possible about working parenthood." Another person said, "The Wise Women's Council brings these incredible women together, and you form relationships over 9 months that approximate the closeness of many years-long friendships. You learn things about yourself that you didn't know before. You unlock ways of understanding the world around you outside of where you were before." And here's one more. Another woman said, "There is no way to describe what it feels like to be validated. So much of being a woman, and more so a mom, makes one feel invisible. In this space, I felt seen and heard by really smart, funny, and fearless parents." If you are looking to join a supportive, expansive, brilliant group of women founders, leaders, business owners, and creatives, then check out the Wise Women's Council. We only open once a year for applications to join. Applications this year close March 1st, 2022. You can go to startupparent.com/WWC, or if you go to our website, look for the Wise Women's Council button right at the top. I hope you join this year. I can't wait to see your application. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Startup Parent Podcast. This is the show where we get to talk to working parents, entrepreneurs, business leaders, and creatives about what it looks like to raise kids and also build companies. I'm your host, Sarah K. Peck. Today, I get to welcome back one of our earliest guests on the show. The last time we had Amber Anderson on the show was in early 2018, which means it's been well over 3 years. She was on episode 29, right when we were brand new with this show. In that episode, Amber told us about her background in tech and in marketing, her pregnancy, and then her story about having a baby born quite early at 31 weeks. We also talked about the George Zimmerman trial and the world she was entering as a parent to becoming the mama of a Black baby and boy. Becoming a parent influenced her choice to become an entrepreneur. If you haven't listened to it, episode 29 is all about rethinking parenting, entrepreneurship, and what work looks like when you incorporate better family systems into your job structure. Since then, over the last 3 years, Amber founded a new agency called Tote and Pairs. It's focused on branding, strategy, and identity. The company creates brand experiences for women and their families. And in today's episode, I ask her to go deep with us on what it is that a branding and marketing agency looks like when it's female focused. So in today's episode, we talk about what brands are getting wrong and what they miss when they think they're speaking to women. Why phrases like women and women of color is really challenging because it implies a default white lens as the baseline. And we talk about how the multiple layers of people's individual identities affect how they see themselves and what assumptions brands and businesses might be making when they use a word like women in their marketing. Also in the show, we talk about moving, homeschooling, co-working with your spouse, going back and forth between work and parenting, and creating new models of what that looks like. One of the things that Amber champions really well is how work and family can be better aligned and figuring out how to make things like conferences and workplaces and work structures work better. This episode was recorded in the late summer of 2020, but it is still timeless and relevant and important. So I am so excited to be bringing it here to you today. And before we dig into the show, one quick shout out to our sponsors. One of the first things that parents ask me about in the early days is sleep. How to get it, how to do it, how the baby gets sleep, and how you are going to get enough sleep. I mean, newsflash, you probably aren't, but I cannot tell you how many friends have told me once their baby sleeps through the night, they are still stressed out and waking up the parents because they are worried. If you want to calm that anxiety, then let me tell you about today's sponsor. This might be the perfect thing for you. The Nanit Plus Smart Baby Monitor helps you see that your baby is doing well so that the whole family can get a better night's rest. It is the only monitoring system that functions as a basic baby monitor and also a breathing motion monitor, plus a nanny cam and a sleep coach. You can rest assured that your baby is healthy and safe and sound and sleeping well. Check out Nanit.com today to learn more about their Nanit Plus smart baby monitor and how it can help you and your little one have a better night's rest. Also, Startup Pregnant listeners, you can use the code STARTUP at Nanit.com to save 10% off your order. All right, now let's dig into our conversation with Amber Anderson. Here's the show. Oh, I'm so excited to have Amber Anderson back on the show. Amber, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I can't believe, I think it's been a year and a half to 2 years since we chatted last. And so I'm just personally so excited to get to catch up with you again. I have so many questions for you. So thanks for being here.
I'm happy to be here. I can't believe it's been that long.
it's like you blink and you're like, oh, the child is at my belly button. Oh, child's taller. How's this happening?
Exactly.
So my favorite first question to ask, and I think this is going to be a fun one for COVID, but what time did you wake up this morning and what was the first thing that you did?
Yeah, I'm actually sleeping better. I think it was like 6:30 this morning.
Oh, dreamy.
I know.
What time do you go to bed?
I think it's 10, maybe 10:30.
Oh, we've switched. Cause I think when we were talking last, that was my schedule. But this morning I woke up at 4:30 and I swear I said, I was in bed and I was like, no. And I pulled the sleep mask on my eyes and I was like, you can do it. Keep sleeping. Do it now. And my body's like cortisol was like, nah, let's be awake. Let's be awake. And I was like, guys, if we can keep sleeping, please just sleep till 6:30. So is that like a typical like 10 to 6? Is that your schedule nowadays or what does your schedule look like?
You know, I just started sleeping better. So I've never been a great sleeper. I've always done my best work like in the middle of the night or 2 a.m. But for some reason, we moved more recently and my son's getting older and I just feel like I'm getting more in a groove. Things are clearer. And so I've noticed that my sleep schedule has adapted to that. It's almost like my body is giving me permission to rest. But it's been a long time. I think I just started getting 8 hours of sleep the last 3 months. And before that, it had been like 10 years that I had gone without getting a good 8 hours of sleep.
What do you think prompted the change?
Oh, you know, I think it's just that now is a perfect time to accept what life is giving you, right? Like, I mean, I think COVID has done a number on all of us, but for my family, it's been a good reminder of how much you don't control, you know, even if with your best intentions, even with putting in hard work, you know, life happens. And when it happens, you can either embrace it and adapt and pivot, or you're going to crumble. And so for us, I think, and me particularly, I think I just have gotten to the point where I'm older now and I'm like, look, I couldn't have planned for a pandemic, right? So at this point, you know, Amber, just give yourself a little grace, you know, and everything will work out just fine. And it has.
But tell us, how old is your son now? And I know you've moved. So tell us some of these details. How old is he? Where are you living now?
Yeah, he is. He's six, six and a half. He'll be seven in November. And we moved from Phoenix to Atlanta 2 years ago. So we moved in March, 2 years ago in March. And it's been amazing. I mean, we found Phoenix to be such a beautiful place to be. But it didn't feel like home. We didn't feel like the energy matched our energy. We were having a hard time finding like-minded families and community. And so we thought it would be good for us to do a change. And the way we chose Atlanta was that we came to visit. I was speaking for a conference. And when we were here, people were so kind to us. And it helped that the weather was perfect. I mean, I'm not going to lie. And it's not like that all the time when we came in November. But people were just so kind and very family-centric, which has always been a core value for us. And so we thought it would be a good time for us to pick up and go to a place we thought we would be better connected. And Atlanta has been that place for us.
Oh, it's so cool to hear about that. So, was the decision instantaneous? Was it, did you know right away? Did it take time to make that decision? What did that look like for you?
I think we knew that Phoenix wasn't the right place for us. We had several experiences that just fell off. But my husband's from there and I had moved there for college. So I just felt like, I mean, how many times do you want to move? And so we were, our family's there. You know, it just felt like we should stick it out because what more do you want? And it turns out we wanted much more. We wanted a sense of inclusion and we wanted to be able to have the opportunity to socialize with people who were like-minded. And so once we figured out that those were values that were really important to us, then it was easy for us to know that we had to make a switch. And once we connected here in Atlanta, we knew, you know, this is the perfect place. Also, we homeschool, and I think I mentioned this before in our last interview, and Atlanta has a really rich, diverse homeschooling community, which we could not find in Atlanta, in Phoenix. And so that was kind of the ticker for us, that this is the space that's best for specifically Black homeschool kids is Atlanta. And so once we decided that that opportunity was available, then we made the move. And we made the decision, and in 60 days, we sold our house and we were gone.
Wow.
I
Oh,
know, right?
that's fast.
Hey.
That's,
Yeah.
yeah. It's so interesting because I remember different moments. You're reminding me. I remember different moments in my life where that landscape of making a decision, sometimes there's a space where you're like, well, I know that this thing isn't right, but I don't know yet what the right thing is. And to me, there's that gulf sometimes in between. Sometimes you know what the right thing is, and it's like very, you pull, get pulled very quickly, like, and we're going there. But other times, like, I knew once that I needed to quit a job, but it took me 2 years to do because I didn't know what the next thing was. And I also had massive amounts of student loan debt. So I was like, well, I'm not just going to jump because I'm going to be worse than I am now, but I do know that I want to leave. But then sometimes when the things start falling into place, things can move so quickly. So what has it been like to be in Atlanta for the last 2 years? Now that you've been there for 2 years, has it been what you expected? What have you discovered? Tell me about Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's been such a journey. I learned so much. It was the first time my husband has ever moved. He had moved within like city limits, but he's 40 now and he had never moved out of Phoenix. And so he had traveled, but not a ton of travel. And so it was just, I think, really great to be able to see what we were able to accomplish together. And it brought us closer in understanding both our strengths and our weaknesses. And being able to lean on each other in the areas that we weren't strong. It was also really eye-opening for us to understand each other's perspectives. Like when we first arrived, I could see the overwhelm in his face, like having to learn everything new. And I think as you get older, it gets harder to learn. You just don't have as much space to process. And how my son also really struggled with that. I think it took him, my son, about a year or so, to get past leaving. And we did not anticipate that. We thought he
Oh,
would be more
interesting.
adaptable. Yeah. But he's very community-based as well. So having a core group of friends and family and reliable people is really important to him. And we wouldn't have known that had we stayed, that that was a core to his needs. But once he adapted, both of them adapted, then it just became smooth sailing. Now, I'll say Atlanta, I do feel like it's like going back in time. Sometimes we laugh about it because the processes aren't as put in place as Phoenix, but the people are really wonderful, and we've loved that.
Wait, so remind me, where did you live before Phoenix? If your husband was there for his whole life, where were you? Where are you
Yeah,
from?
I'm from a suburb, northwest suburb in Chicago,
Okay.
called Bartlett slash Carroll Stream.
Okay. So you've been in the kind of big city. Well, I guess Phoenix is also a big city, but it's different, right? What always strikes me, and I don't know what other people think, I'd be curious what your husband thinks, is the vegetation difference, especially like the Southwest. When I moved to the East Coast for the first time, I was like, everything is so green, but it's like almost like a horror movie. Like the plants are alive and they want to eat the roads. Like it's just so intense. Like plants are so much tidier in desert areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. Oh, that's really interesting that it took your son a bit to adjust also. So he was 5 then when you moved, or 4 and a half?
4, yeah. I mean, he was 4 and then he turned 5 while we were here. Yeah, and you know what's interesting is I think, and I was just having this conversation the other day with a friend where they were saying, you know, for our kids who they're young, you know, we want to be able to be global and we want to be able to move and they'll find community anywhere they go. And I said, you know, I think sometimes we assume that our kids have the same needs and perspectives as we do, when in reality, even at young ages, they're very unique. So we would have assumed as well that my social butterfly would be fine making friends anywhere and finding his space anywhere. But we learned so much when we put him in that situation that he really, truly, actually wants a home base. Right. And I think that for those of us that are younger millennials and have had this movement, we assume I can continue to move forever, when in reality, I think children bring you back to reality. And that's certainly what happened for us. Mm.
First of all, you probably hear my little one. Maybe, I don't know if people hear my little one, but he's fighting nap time just in the other room. And so he's like, no. So it's distracting me a little bit, but also we are on the precipice of a move. We'll be moving in a couple weeks. And I'm so curious because we haven't moved with these kiddos. So I'm wondering, like, what will my 4-year-old, how will he adjust and how will my 2-year-old adjust? Leo, the older one, I've been taking him up to the new place and he's really on a bender over there. Poor Henry. I've been taking him up and he looked through the whole place. We currently live in a 2-bedroom apartment that has 1 bathroom. And like, I'm so excited about having 2 bathrooms. I cannot tell you. I'm like, I cannot, there's just too many boys pooping in my family right now. And so we went up and Leo was like running around and opening all the cabinets and like looking through this empty house. And I guess his paradigm is that, you know, houses have 1 bathroom because that's what he knows. So he makes a beeline for the parents' bedroom and then was like looking through all the closets and opens a door and he's like, oh, a secret bathroom? it blew his mind that our bedroom had a bathroom attached to it. And he came home and I was like, what'd you think of the new place? He goes, it's so great. It has a secret bathroom. Just like, all right, dude, if that gets you going and that helps us make this move easy, I'm all for it. You can use the secret bathroom.
Listen, you know, I mean, the things that kids get so excited about and their world opens up is just like a whole new space.
I know. But it's so, what did he say the other day, by the way? Yes, it was yesterday. He said, Mom, if you want to do something you don't know how to do, if you like, you're trying to throw a ball in a fancy way and you don't know how to do it, then you should just, well, first you should just empty your mind. And then you should think of all the things you like chocolate chip sprinkles, and then you'll know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, all right.
Easy.
Great. Chocolate chip sprinkles. I'll know how to do it. So the last time we chatted, we talked about, you told us about your entrepreneurship path, and we talked about the entrepreneurial threads, like how do you rethink your family? How do you rethink homeschooling and school? How do you create businesses that aren't at odds with family, but that like all of these different pieces can be thought of more cohesively? And I am curious, because the last time we talked about you running multiple companies. You had a consultancy and you had the New More. And you have now launched a new brand. It's been a couple years, I think, but I want to dig into Tote and Pairs and also what you're doing in your business life now and how it's changed since the last time we spoke. So can you tell us what's changed in your business, and can you tell us about this new brand, even though it maybe isn't new anymore, but it still feels new to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tote and Pairs has actually been, it's part of a ever-winding story for us. It's a female-focused branding agency. So we've always done product and branding and marketing. It's something that we launched in our agency 8, almost 9 years ago. So it's the same agency we've always had, but we rebranded about 2 years ago. And the reason we did that is because, one, I always thought it was really important to be niche. I just didn't know what that niche needed to be. And More was our opportunity, which is our other company, was our opportunity to explore the things that we cared about, which was family and independence and experiences that supported us. And so Tote & Pairs was really kind of just the next generation for us. It was a rebrand of our other agency, Kaysen, that's centered around connecting companies with women and their families. And the reason we chose women is because we think women are the thread that ties it all together. At the end of the day, women make over 85% of all consumer purchasing decisions. And in most cases, when we go into meetings with new clients, we ask the people around the table, who is making the decisions in your household? And it's almost a 10 out of 10 every time that it's the wife or the significant other. And we also find that women at the end of the day are the ones that are struggling in many cases along several lines, whether it be understanding our roles as we navigate through different parts of our journey, motherhood, you know, work, kids off to college, widowers. Our perspectives change so drastically. We thought it was really important for us to step into the space and kind of own the fact that we had a perspective, and we also had done a lot of work and research and trying to understand what the challenges were that women were facing when it came to supporting their families as well as just kind of thriving independently. And we wanted to use that as an opportunity to do better and help companies that are trying to support women do better too. So that's what Tote & Pairs is. It's a brand new marketing agency that's female focused.
I mean, I have just like adored and admired the work that I've seen on Instagram and out through the web. And I have people, I don't know if you know this, but people have told me like, oh, this brand is so interesting. we talk about it in our Wise Women's Council. People are like, oh, Tote & Pairs is so cool. And I'm like, I know. I'm like, I know her. but it's really, it's just so beautiful. It's refreshing. Like when I see your Instagram updates and it's just full of, beautiful, real people, like it's just so to me, and I don't know quite how to capture this, but it just feels like, oh yes. Like you're like releasing your shoulders, you're exhaling, you're like, finally someone's saying things that are true. That's, that's what's just so lovely as an experience when I relate to your brand and the work that you do. Now, can you tell me in terms of business, who are your ideal clients? Who are the people that you work with? Because I know that you are a marketing and branding agency focused on women, but who are you working with and what is the transformation or the goal that you're focused on when you work together?
Yeah. So we've worked with all size companies, whether they be a startup or a large organization that's looking to create more long-lasting and authentic connections with women. And really what drives, I think, people to Tote & Pairs is this notion that they're really trying to understand their audience, right? I think there's lots of times in which in branding and advertising, we're talking to our audience. We're not trying to walk alongside them. And so what we're really focused on is helping these companies, and we're really selective about who we choose, that are trying to really help, right? So for this year, for example, we've taken on a number of nonprofits that are centered around helping women get into tech or helping women increase their chances in the workforce or just providing ultimate support to women and people of diverse backgrounds. In a way that is meaningful to us and we think pushes them in our agenda, which is to help women and their families move forward. And what we find is we only really hit our sweet spot when we know that our client is authentic themselves. So that means that you are looking to create messaging and something that resonates with not just one segment of the population, but all, and you understand there's an intersectional view that has to happen to do that.
Can you say more? I'm like... can you have example? I mean, I'm sitting here, people, you can't see me, but I just have my chin on my hand and I'm like, keep going. I just want to know so much more about what you do. So I guess What is it that you think that brands are missing, or what do you think that brands are still getting wrong when it comes to the way that they message and talk to or about women? What are some people doing that are missing the mark?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a couple of basic things. One is women are diverse. So when we say women, who exactly are we talking about? In many cases, we're talking about the majority. We're talking about white women. There's a phrase that people will say, women and women of color. And when you say even simple things like that, then that means you've separated it out, right? There's white women, and then there's all the women of color. And we see that all the time, where it's like we assume all women think the same way, when in reality, there's layers to our identity, right? The person that I was when I was 20 years old and getting ready to graduate from college is a completely different person than after I had my son. And then now that I'm hitting and pushing towards 40 and my son's 6, I'm a totally different person as well. So the first thing that we do is we kind of take our clients through this journey of just stepping back for a moment and kind of taking away all the assumptions that you have about women, clearing that all out, and then laying out the basic foundation, which is, let's just talk about her journey. Her journey from turning from a girl to a woman, from a woman to a wife, from a wife to a mother. And then within motherhood, you have the infant phase, you've got the toddler phase, you know, you've got all these phases. Mm-hmm. And then you eventually reach a destination in which she's most likely, in many cases, a widower, or she's being supported now by her daughter or her children. And so understanding kind of the nuances of this journey is the first phase, that women are going to go through this experience, and their experiences are important to understand so you know how to connect with them based off of where they are in that journey. And then also that layer of, well, what are the things that shape her perspective? Is it race? Is it culture? Is it language? Is it economic status? Is it gender? Is it social orientation? There's multiple things that when you start to layer on these cards, change us from being just a generic persona to someone with a very unique experience. And when we're able to show people that we understand your perspective, we hear you, we see you, and we know that you are unique, then they gravitate towards it, right? It's as if, like you mentioned, which I'm grateful you said, because that's our goal, people say, this is the truth, you know? And so I think those are like the two basic fundamentals of our approach. It's, let's talk about the journey of a woman and how that changes. And then let's add on these layers and see now who are we really talking about and what does she need from us? And how can we go about giving it to her?
I love this. And I love the specificity too, right? Because when we just say, oh, I'm going to market to women, what does that even mean, right? Who are you talking to? And the ability in your words to say, like, I see you, right? I see you, I understand you. That's such an empathetic and kind approach. But it probably takes a lot more work, right? And you can't just slap some pink on something and be like, and now women will buy this.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, one of the biggest things that I think people are surprised about is in many cases, women identify with other layers before they identify with their gender. So race is a really great one. When in many cases, I think it's like 8 out of 10 Black women will say, I identify with my race over I do my gender.
Whoa, say more.
Yeah. And the presidential election is a really great example of that, where it was, you know, we assume all women are going to vote for a Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, but that's not true.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And so that's where I think we have the opportunity to think, like, we make these social constructs like gender and assume everyone fits in those buckets, when in reality, we're all super unique. And I think gender is an area where we've been super confused about how are people connected, when in reality, we may have more dots that need to be tied together. And that's where Toten Parish, like, we spend our days and our nights focused on those dots and those layers.
Yes. Wow. So, and then what is the transformation that you're hoping? What are some of the results or the outcomes? I know you work with so many different companies, but when people take this approach, when they do this work with you, what are some of the things that they get to discover or find out or become?
Yeah. So the goal is to, first and foremost, understand their audience better, right? So when we understand our audience, we can create better products, better services, and we can ensure we're putting out the right experiences. And so sometimes that means adjusting your company, right? That means adjusting the way you do business, adjusting the way you communicate, adjusting the people you hire, adjusting your values to make sure they're aligned. And so there's this kind of internal work that happens. And then externally, what we're looking for in every engagement is we now have created a long-lasting relationship. You know, brands are creating relationships with their customers. And so when your customer feels like they hear you and you hear them and that you see them, then they're more likely to allow you into their heart. And then they allow you into their home. And that's kind of the point, is you can speak directly to them, grab their attention, find a way for you to connect in their heart, and then they'll bring you into their home. But I'm not going to let you just bring your product onto my, you know, newborn, or I'm not just going to let you become the staple in my really sacred home if I don't trust you. And so doing the authentic work up front allows us to build that trust and create the relationships that are going to last.
How has your work or your messaging changed at all in the time of COVID, you know, with coronavirus coming along in the pandemic? Have you seen a shift in your business and in the work that you do, or a shift in companies and the work that they think they need?
No. I mean, what we're saying has been the case regardless of what the scenario is. And, you know, when you talk about layers, you understand that experiences are going to affect different communities differently. So we're definitely talking more about what does COVID mean for working mothers? What does COVID mean for a working mother who's Black? What does COVID mean? You know what I mean? Like, those things have changed, and we're talking about that. But the fundamentals don't change. We navigate through our life and we go through different ups and downs. And when those things arise, we talk to people where they are. And by understanding where they came from and where they are today, it's the same process and the same approach. The messaging just might be a little different. But Black Lives Matter and COVID haven't really changed us much. We've been talking about some of the things that are popping up as issues for years.
I know, I was going to say that you live in the future. To me, you live in the future because you've been doing homeschooling and working remote and running a business while having children at home since before COVID. Like you're probably looking at everyone and be like, yep, I got the playbook. I know how this works. So wise woman from the future, can you tell me, what are some of the things that you have done? I know we touched on this in our last episode, but what are some of the ways in which you show up across work and parenting that have made it work for you and your family? Like, how do you, I know you no longer get up at 4 a.m. You're getting more sleep. Thank goodness. But what are some of the ways that you structure your day to make it possible to do homeschooling and work at the same time?
I think the first thing is recognizing that this is important for me. This is core to who I am. So I became an entrepreneur and decided to homeschool and stay home the moment my son was born. That was it. And so at that moment in time, it was like, there is no alternative. This is what's important and we make it work. So we've structured our life in a way that allows for it. And what that's been helpful is that then things like schools down or you can't go to school is not part of our vocabulary. It just never has been. We have always had these workarounds for supporting our family independently, which is definitely a hard thing to do and was futuristic and is crazy to think people are having to go through it now in such a crazy time. My husband now stays home. So I can't remember if when we last spoke, we had always planned on switching. So for the first couple of years of our son's life, my husband worked and helped a little bit in the business where he could, but that wasn't his responsibility. And I was home. I was a primary caregiver. And then when we moved, we made the decision to have him quit his job of 17 years to be home and work part-time in our business and then become our son's primary caregiver. So he is now responsible for everything pertaining to planning, school. He's the teacher. He handles the meals, he handles the household, and we tag team using our strengths as much as possible. So I'm much more strategic, he's much more tactical, and so being able to lean in on both of our capabilities has just been like the best thing that could have ever happened to us. But I also thought it was really important for him to have the opportunity to be home, because it opened his eyes to what, one, what I was going through and why it was difficult, but two, because he wanted to be with our son too, and experience those moments with him. And he was not able to do that when he was working. And so it was a gift that I could give to him, and a gift that he gave right back to me, to be able to go back and work full time.
What does full time mean to you? Like, can you give us a sketch? Hours are one unit of measurement, but like, are you working 30, 50? Like, are you, how many hours are you working, and how many hours is he working on the business?
Yeah, he works about 10 to 15 hours a week. He manages our podcast. Like, so we do podcasts for Tone Pairs, but we also do podcasting for our clients. And so he's over all media. So it's any implementations of a podcast, or if he has to jump into editing, that's his responsibilities. And it's been set up in a way that he can do it whenever time allows for him. So he enjoys the nights. And then I work probably about 40 to 50 hours a week. Mm-hmm. I am getting much better at having a cutoff. Things are obviously can be crazier than other times. So we're scaling, and when we're scaling, it just requires more of me. But I'm definitely trying to create these balances of, you know, this is not really that important. You know, I feel like it is, but it's not. And so unless it hits like 3 check boxes, it's just something I'm not going to do until the next day. So cutting out any weekend works, cutting off working at 6 p.m. And making sure I'm actively present for my husband and my son is important to me. And I find that they actually like crave me. Sometimes I'll come downstairs and they're both on my, one's on my right side and one's on my left side, like following me. So it's almost like they missed me too, you know? And I, it's a funny moment in time, but it just reminds me of how much, you know, the people in my life need me just as much as the work needs me. And I need to make sure that I'm there for them.
And what is, can you tell me more? I'm always so fascinated by these, like these day-to-day details. What does the structure of the day look like in this moment in time? Like, when are school activities, and what part of homeschooling are you involved in, and what does that look like?
Yeah. So for homeschooling, I'm responsible for the planning. So every year we'll do a planning. We'll decide what curriculum we're going to use. We're going to put together any templates that my husband needs to use. I do all that. I research or hire a consultant to help me through what should a 6-year-old be doing, you know, and that specializes in those areas. So I'll get us set up for the year. And then my husband takes it from there. So he has a daily schedule that he'll set up that'll include all the subjects as well as their activities that they're going to do. And he plugs and plays and manages that. So honestly, he owns what their time looks like. I start my day usually about 6:45. I'll get up and then I'll go take our dog for a walk. I'll come in and spend about 2 hours reading over a business book and setting up the infrastructure for our growth. So that might be, I'm reading a book called Traction right now. Have you read it?
I have.
Yeah, I really like it. So I'll literally go through and set up all the different nuances. That's the time I use to only focus on my business. And then my son doesn't wake up until like 9:30. So I'll try and have breakfast ready for them. And then I kick off my work day at 10 and I'll work until about 6. And then I shut it off for dinner.
Okay. I'm like, this is always so intriguing to me, because I like hearing about the setup. I'm curious, do you go down for a long lunch, and what does it look like? Because there are actually so many people in our Wise Women's Council and various communities that are either thinking about retiring their husbands or working in a partnership with their husbands, becoming co-founders. And this array of different types of relationships and then different types of family/business planning and how it all intersects is so interesting. And it's often what I've heard from a lot of people, very different than people expected. And there's the whole, there's a whole array. You know, some people say we did it and it was absolutely amazing. And other people say we did it and it turns out my husband really doesn't like being a stay-at-home dad, right? Like this, we did it for a year, we're good. And the shifting dynamic too of maybe traditional power structures, if you will, because when a female becomes a primary breadwinner or takes on more of the, I do not like the word traditional, so we can maybe workshop this a little bit, but takes on the expected role of primary breadwinner and household organizer. It's just so interesting to watch how these relationships change us and how we change around them, which is why I am, as always, very nosy and curious about what yours looks like.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of it is cultural. So, for example, in my family, it wasn't odd for my dad to take on caregiving responsibilities. And I think in lots of Black families, that's the case. I mean, the mothers have always worked. We had to work. Right? So in our case, it was never the structure of the woman should do this and the man should do that. It was whatever needed to be done for our household, we do.
That's right.
And so I think foundationally, that is the key that keeps my husband and I going. It's whatever we need to do for our family, we do. And it's funny because I put together our core values for our business and I ensure that they align with our core values of our family. Like the way that we operate in this world is consistent. So bringing him in on our business made sense because he shares the same values that I have. So he fits into the values of our organization, and our son is fitting into the values of his homeschooling structure are all the same. We haven't changed.
Do you have those written out, the core values of your family and the core values of your business?
I do. I do. So do you want me to tell you what they are?
I do. Of course I do.
So the first one is own it, and own it means you are responsible for your piece of this pie. In this family, we each have a responsibility. You know, mine is at this point, I'm the breadwinner. I bring in the money. My husband's is to educate our son and to maintain our household. And none of that will operate successfully if we don't own our own pieces. Mm. So step into your truth and you own it. And you're responsible for it. So if you mess up, then say I messed up so that we can fix it and we can all move forward together. Mm. The second one is to care deeply. We're super empathetic. And I think empathy is a big piece of what makes my husband and I tick. It's also what makes us super different. And so in our agency, what you see is a group of people who are empathetic and thrive in spaces where they're allowed to show their deep caring feelings. And in our home, it's about caring about each other and caring about our family. And so that's where I think this concept of you know, whatever needs to happen, whatever you need to be successful, if it's my son, you are going to thrive better in a homeschool environment. And I care about you so much that we're going to give you that because you deserve it, you know? So caring is part of who we are in our being. The third one is to be humble. And so regardless of the amount of success any of us get individually, does not matter. It's to be able to recognize there's a bigger piece of the world. And there's people that have less than us. There's people that have more than us. We're grateful for where we are and we'll continue to navigate through this space. But nobody steps into any room that we're in with an ego. Otherwise, it's just not going to be a good fit. The fourth one is to embrace different. So my husband calls us a bunch of colored marbles in a jar full of solid colors. We're like a rainbow. And so being able to see and empathize with other people's differences and embrace them for who they are is important to us, you know? And I think, again, in our business, you can see us talking about that, being honest about saying, hey, this works for one group, but it doesn't work for the other group, and here's why. Or speaking about topics like on our podcast, we had a podcast on being non-binary and what that means. To say women to people that do not identify as that and embracing that different perspective. And then the fifth one is to say what you're thinking. Say what you're thinking is one that I had to work on when I was younger because I didn't feel like people wanted to hear what I had to say.
Oh,
You know, because I'm very opinionated, and I felt like I always brought good data, but I was really quickly taught there's a time and a place for your opinion. And so in my business and in my family, we have made it a point to say, as long as you're respectful, say what you're thinking, because you're smart, you are really talented, and whatever you have going on in that brain, I want to hear it. So those are our five core values.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, first of all, taking notes because I do, because I love it. But also I'm curious about this last one. When you think about the idea that say what you're thinking is a reaction to or a response to growing up in a place where maybe that wasn't always allowed, what layers are present for you there? Like, where do you think that comes from?
You know, my family, my mother and my father were really big on like, you can be anything you want to be. They embraced my opinions. I was able to talk in my household. That was never an issue. Where it became an issue is when I would go out of my house, and that's where I was challenged. And I certainly think, you know, gender and race had an issue. I was raised in a mostly white neighborhood. And so I learned over time, again, there's a time and a place where you get to speak. Corporate America is another great example where it's, you know, you've got your job titles. And so if somebody is in a junior job title, not every department embraces giving them the platform to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I think initially my entrance into the workforce was, again, this girl's talking too much. I mean, she's got so many opinions. and so, you know, there were some managers that were really good about seeing that and saying she's going to be somebody special one day. You know, and then there were some managers who were like, she's going to show me up. So I need to shut her up first. And so I definitely feel like navigating through those spaces shaped me. And it wasn't until I became an entrepreneur and could create those spaces for myself and other people who were like me that I realized that it was so important to say what you're thinking and not to allow people to take that from me anymore.
Yes. Amen. Amen. I'm there's always so many things that I want to talk to you about and so many questions I have for you. And I love getting to hear about your core values. We have established core values for our business, and then we are evolving the ones we have in our family. A lot of times it comes up because we say the same thing so many times. We're like, oh, that's one of them. That's a peer. What would you call something that you stand on? I'm like making a gesture. I'm like, that's a strut, but a strut is not a support. Listeners, you can even email me whatever you think. That's foundation, pillar, there you go.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the ones we have in our family is called try it and see. Mm-hmm. When we're trying to make decisions or we're thinking about something, a lot of this comes from growth mindset ethos, but when we're stuck, sometimes it's like, try it and see what will teach us more. And then another one my husband and I have, and when it comes to parenting, and this is a little bit of a reaction to, or a response to, the very particular culture we live in today and the last 20 or 30 years of parenting becoming a verb, a thing that you could achieve and aspire to be excellent at. We always say, all you have to do is be a good enough parent. We don't have to optimize to the nth degree to become the most perfect parents ever. We think that's kind of a fool's errand to try to make perfect people out of your children and not give them space to breathe. So if they eat peanut butter sandwiches, as long as they don't have peanut allergies, right? If they eat peanut butter sandwiches for 7 days, good enough. Like, we're doing a good enough job as parents. And it helps us. Like, I'm not saying this is everybody's core value, but it really helps us in our, in our own day-to-day, in our own, like, the ways that we feel pressure maybe to be perfectionists or type A, or, you know, try to be the whatever the best is. So it's really nice to have that shared dialogue in our partnership and talk about, like, what is it that we believe in and what do we stand for and how do we make decisions?
Yeah, and you had mentioned that a lot of people go back and forth about, is my partner the right person, you know, at home to be in my business or to start a business with? And for us, it was like, what better person could I pick than someone who's already committed their life to me? You know, that knows my quirks and my crazy and loves me anyways. Like, for me, I started off in business trying to find third-party partners, and they didn't work out because they didn't share my core values. But my husband, in every way, shape, or form, we've been together 18 years, has proven to align with me on these things. And so for us, it was just a no-brainer that I couldn't think of a better person to bring into other, you know, aspects of my life.
Well, I'm so curious because I just talked to another woman who, her co-founder, she's married to, but they also are co-founding a startup together. And she said it was so interesting to go from in a relationship to then being business partners, because the way they speak to each other at home, I'd be like, love you, great job. They have this whole lexicon in their home life. But then when it comes to being in the office with each other along with their team, like, he's not going to lean over and kiss her, be like, love you, great job on this project. Like, there's a different vocabulary. And she realized that her, like, love languages might be a term, but like the things she needed in the business room were slightly different. Like, she's like, I didn't need a lot of affirmation at home necessarily. I'm like, you did a great job on the dishes. But for some reason in the work sphere, she was like, I actually do need a lot of affirmation. And so I find this so interesting because there can be maybe not a new relationship, but another side of your relationship when you become business partners with someone. Like, there can be, you can explore more. And I love what you're saying about the foundation. You need a good foundation do we have the same core values? Like, do we believe the same things? Are we headed in the same direction? But then on top of that, the particulars always, I think, can be so challenging to figure out.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, and the last time I was here, we talked about how I feel like my life is, it's not separated, right? It's intertwined. Yeah. One of the things I think that's valuable about that is I move forward through this world one step at a time, but it's always in the same direction. I don't put on a different face when I'm at home than I do that I'm at work. It might be different pieces of me, but setting up my company in a way where we all operate the same way. It's not uncommon for us to get off of a conference call and say, he walks out the door and it's like, okay, bye, and give him a kiss. Like, 'cause that's how we are,
yeah.
Right? So I wanted to make sure that our company was as authentic to who we are as possible. So anybody that comes into that space could be themselves. It's funny because I find that more of our clients like love that. I am dealing with two people here. They're a husband and a wife. I can see that they're a team, and I can see that what they're saying to me to connect our business with other people, families, women, is just as authentic as they are, right?
Yeah.
They're not trying to be something different than what they're communicating. What they're communicating is who they are. And so for us, that was really important for me because that was what I needed, was to be myself wholeheartedly no matter where I was. I do think roles and responsibilities are important. So there is no doubt in the business who is the decision maker. It's going to be me because I'm the CEO. That's me owning what my responsibilities are. But when it comes to other things like making a big purchase at our home, there's no doubt about who makes the final decision about that. It's him, because that's his role and responsibility. So I think it's the layers of the role and responsibilities plus creating that authentic space for people to be them true selves that has helped us.
Amber, I could talk to you for hours. I like how listening to how your brain works and hearing about what you're making in the world and how you're setting up your family and your business with such intentionality. And I'm so grateful that you shared your core values with everyone and with me on the podcast. Thank you for being here. Where can people find out about you on the interwebs and follow you?
Oh, wow. So I think the best place to find me is going to be through Tote and Pears. And it's just tote, like the bag, and pears, like the fruit.com. And through that, you can reach out, you can follow us on social. This is going to be a great space to connect either through social or on email.
I love your social media presence. It is such a pleasure to see when I'm when I'm deep in the scroll.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks everyone for joining us for another episode of the Startup Parent Podcast. I'm Sarah Peck, your host. This episode was put together and produced by me, Sarah Peck, and I am so grateful to Amber for joining me. You can find her at toteandpairs.com, and you can follow her on Instagram at toteandpairs. If you want any of the links or the show notes, go over to our website, startupparent.com/podcast for all episodes. And if you want the specific show notes for this episode, there's a link in your podcast player, and you can go to startupparent.com/the number of whatever episode you are listening to, and you will find the specific show notes for that episode. The music we used for this episode was from Epidemic Sound. The first song at the beginning was called Girl Like You by Flux Vortex. And the song here at the end that you're hearing is called Afraid by Gloria Tells. A shout out and a thank you again to the sponsors of our podcast. And if you want to become a backer or a sponsor, you can reach out at startupparent.com/sponsor. If you want to subscribe to get alerts for upcoming episodes of the podcast, head to startupparent.com/subscribe. If you would like to listen to the bonus episodes, we have a private podcast for folks who are Patreon backers. So go to startupparent.com/Patreon. You can become a backer. And we are about to add some new fun things like swag for people who are backers on Patreon. Lastly, if you're a parent and you are navigating the parenting journey, you can go to startupparent.com/minibooks. That is MINI for mini, and then books, BOOKS, mini books. That's where we have short books that are resources for parents and people who are pregnant. Go take a look and see if we can help you out in any way. Most of all, thanks for being here. If you have time to leave a review, we really appreciate reviews. It helps tell other people that, hey, this podcast is worth a listen. So if you think it's worth a listen and you're all the way here listening at the end, please take the time and leave us a review. We would love it. Love it, love it. No, I would love it, love it, love it. And as we muddle through the murky midpoint of this pandemic, I really hope you all are hanging in there. That's it for now, and I will see you on the next episode.